Last Sunday, we started a very short sermon series we're calling The Bright Star of Bethlehem. We turned way back in the book of Numbers and studied the enigmatic prophecy, which Jenny put on the front of our worship bulletins this week, which under the influence of the Holy Spirit, the pagan prophet Balaam squinted down the corridors of time and saw the coming of a star. Balaam said, "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel." And we said that that star and that scepter were symbols of a king to come. And we said that in the first instance, that king was probably named David. Balaam saw the coming of King David. That's one of the reasons, I think, why the symbol on the flag of the nation of Israel is called the Star of David. David was the star. He came, he conquered, he ruled, he shined, he fulfilled the ancient prophecy. But we also said that King David's kingdom came to an end. King David's enemies were subdued, but not ultimately destroyed. King David himself did not shine for long. So we wondered. We wondered together with the ancient Israelites and with Christians throughout the centuries if there wasn't still something more to come, someone more to come, to fill up that prophecy to the brim and then overflow far as the curse is found. Last week we hypothesized that ultimately Jesus was the star. We know he's the light of the world. We've heard that already this morning, John 8:12. We know that King David was a type of Christ. King David was a pattern, a repeating pattern, an illustration, a pictorial shadow of the King of Kings to come. Everything that King David did that was good was a foretaste of the Messiah to come. And even most things that happened to King David, even the bad, were also a foretaste of what the Messiah would experience, even in his betrayal and suffering. You can't read 1 and 2 Samuel or David's Psalms without getting glimpses of the Christ to come. Great David's greatest son was still to come, and he would take up and fulfill all of what David was supposed to be and do, including being born in the birth town of King David himself. A little place called Bethlehem, you may have heard of it. You may have sung about it already this morning. A sleepy little village about 6 miles south of Jerusalem. That's where the first star was born. I got a message from Bonnie Dobash this week that called David the understar. I love that. That's exactly right. The understar was born in Bethlehem. Where do you think the upper star, the star of stars, would be born? And how do you think his birth would be marked? It would only be fitting for the birth of this star to be heralded by a star up in the heavens. And that's exactly what happened. Let's look at Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. This story takes place about 1,500 years after last week's story with the talking donkey and everything. And sometime, we're not sure exactly how long, but some time has elapsed since the events of Matthew chapter 1, which the kids acted out for us this morning. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." I lifted the title for this message from that verse 2, "We saw his star." Who's the we in verse 2? Last week we had this word I see him but not yet, and that I was Balaam, the pagan prophet, the magician, the soothsayer from the east, perhaps Persia or Babylon, somewhere out towards the Euphrates River. Who's the we in verse 2? Who's the we saw his star? Wise men. Verse 1 says, magi. King James translates that, wise men. And we just don't know that much about them. These strange men come onto the scene here in Matthew chapter 2, and then they go off of the scene in Matthew chapter 2, and they're never heard from again. Who were these mystery men? We don't really know. A couple of centuries before this, there were a group of Medes who were priests called the Magi, and they apparently claimed some ability to interpret dreams and that sort of thing. We would have called them magicians. The Greek word magus is used of a sorcerer in the book of Acts. And in fact, we get our English word magic and magicians from the word magi here. I tend to think they were from Babylon, perhaps like Balaam, and were related to the magicians and astrologers mentioned in the book of Daniel. The Greek translation of the Old Testament uses the word magi there in the first few chapters of Daniel. And they may have been royalty or connected to royalty because, as we'll soon see, they bring expensive royal gifts with them. But that's getting ahead of the story. It's possible they were kings or coming on behalf of some kings. We don't know. You know, there's a lot we don't know in this story. In fact, I've only got 2 points this morning, and our ignorance is a major part of the first one. His star was a star of wonder, meaning both a mystery and a miracle. What kind of star was this? We don't know. There have been so many attempts to explain this star in history. Some people think it's a conjunction of stars. Some people think it's a supernova. I read a bunch of theories this week, and I don't know that much about astronomy to evaluate their claims. Any astronomers here among us? One really interesting one was that this star was a comet. And I read this week about this one scholar, Colin Nickel, who is strong on both the New Testament and on astronomy, who makes a complicated argument for that position and how a comet would fit all the descriptions here in Matthew 2. I don't know. And I don't know how these guys knew that this star belonged to the king of the Jews. Look at verse 2 again. Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. How did they know that this was his star? I don't know. I don't know who these guys are. I don't know what exactly they saw. And I don't know why they knew it pointed to the king of the Jews. All I know is that it happened. And that makes all the difference for you and me. That's mystery for you. How well do you do with mystery? How do you handle not knowing something that you wished that you knew? Mystery can be very unsatisfying. Wanting to know something is like an itch, right? If I just say the word itch, you start to feel one, don't you? And what happens when you get an itch? You want to scratch it, right? Mystery's like that. There are many things in the Bible and in life that we do not know. And we're not going to know in this life. And that just has to be okay. We just have to live with the itch. The Bible says, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. The key, of course, is to know which are which, right? Which things are we supposed to know and to follow? And if you're supposed to know it, know it. You're supposed to follow it? Follow it. And which things are secret? The mysteries, just for God to know and for us to trust. What do you wish you knew right now and you just have to hand it over to him again? Here's a little phrase I want to give you, okay? It'll be a big help. It's going to be hard to say. I want you to practice saying this. I don't know, and that's okay. Go ahead, say that to the person next to you. Is it though? Is it okay? The secret things belong to the Lord, but the things revealed belong to us and our children forever. It's okay to wonder. Heather Joy and I have Snack and Yak today. And I love that at Snack and Yak, those of you young people that listen to the message come back to my office after church and we'll sit around and talk about what we learned today. And one of the things we do at Snack and Yak every week is wonder. What do you wonder? It's okay to wonder. But it's not okay to demand to know the things that God has not revealed. Now, my best guess is that these men had heard about Numbers chapter 24, verse 17 that we studied last week. It's on the front of your bulletin. Perhaps 600 years before this event, during the Babylonian exile, the prophet Daniel and his friends were sitting around with all the magi, the astrologers, and the wise men of Babylon, and they said to him, "Oh, Numbers 24:17 says, a star will come out of Jacob." And then that lore was passed down through all the wise men of Babylon. And when a mysterious star arose that they could make neither heads nor tails of, they headed west to see if this star was that star. Who knows? Not me. And that's okay. Perhaps the Lord told them directly what it meant. I don't know. Anyway about it, they were right. They had seen his star. A star of wonder, and not just wondrous mystery, but wondrous miracle. Only God can make this happen. Only God is powerful enough to move the heavens to declare the birth of this king. This star makes us marvel. Because even the magi know that the point of this star is not the star itself, but that the point of this star is what the star was pointing at. The king of the Jews. These pagans, these Gentiles have traveled far following this star to see the real star of Bethlehem. They came to Jerusalem and they asked King Herod, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews?" Now, who's this Herod person? I hear he's really great. He calls himself the king of the Jews. Is he a descendant of King David? No, he's not. He's actually, get this, a descendant of Esau, of Edom. He's an Edomian king who has been put in charge by the Roman Empire, and he's evil. He's like Pharaoh level bad. He's called Herod the Great, not because he was great, but because he was the Herod that all the other Herods came from. Like the great grandpa Herod. He did great building programs like fixing up the temple, but he was truly evil, greatly evil. He killed his wife. He killed some of his children when they crossed or threatened him. Herod would do anything to hold onto power. But the Magi don't know that yet. So they come with their question, and Herod is very upset by their questions. Look at verse 3. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Now, I never made the connection this week, but as a descendant of Esau, of Edom, he might have should have been worried about Numbers chapter 24, verse 18. The very next verse in Balaam's prophecy. You remember that from last week? I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. He will crush the foreheads of Moab. The skulls of all the sons of Sheth. What's the next verse say? Edom will be conquered. Seir, his enemy, will be conquered. But Israel will grow strong. A ruler will come out of Jacob and destroy the survivors of the city. Wow. So if you belong to Moab and you're Ruth, you're safe and welcomed into the covenant community. But if you're part of Edom and fighting against the people of God or oppressing the people of God, I would watch out for that scepter that is coming to conquer Edom. I would watch out for that ruler to come out of Jacob. I would look over my shoulder if I heard that a star had risen out of Jacob. When King Herod heard this, he was shaking in his boots, and all Jerusalem with him. A king? Huh, I'm the king. Ain't nobody else gonna be the king. But he's no dummy. Herod needs better intel, so he calls in the Jewish religious leaders for an intelligence briefing. Verse 4. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. What's the answer to that one? Everybody should know the answer to this one. It was much clearer than the star question. Bethlehem. How do you know that? Because we sang it this morning, right? Because David was born there, yes? And also because of Micah chapter 5. Matthew reproduced it in our verse 5. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel. Out of you will come a ruler. A scepter, a star, from Bethlehem. Now we know that it took a lot of doing to get Jesus to be born in Bethlehem. Mary and Joseph were not born there, but the Lord moved things around to get them there for the birth of Mary's child, miraculously, wondrously. And then he sent a star to lead the Magi there. So Herod now knows that there's a star, and that the Messiah, the Christ, the upper star, was supposed to be born in Bethlehem. What does he do? More conspiracy. Verse 7. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He's going to do some math. He sent them, the Magi, to Bethlehem and said, go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him, which is, of course, a bald-faced lie. But they don't know that yet either. It's interesting that Herod doesn't go himself or send some soldiers. He wants to gather more intel on the threat first before sending in his incursion. But he senses what's at stake. Isn't it interesting that nobody else goes either? Nobody seems all that excited about the king of the Jews except for these Gentiles and this evil king who has sent them on a manhunt or a baby hunt, as the case may be. Verse 9. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And to me, that's amazing too. It shows up again, like it was gone, and then it's there, and it goes ahead of them. It's like a traveling star, and then it stops. Whoever hears about a star that stops? Doesn't everything in the heavens just constantly move? The astronomers that I read about this week have explanations of how that could be a comet, and they might be right. I'm not smart enough to tell. But I just shake my head in wonder. Sounds like a miracle to me. Like the pillar of fire in the book of Exodus. Of course, it's just as wondrous if the Lord arranges the heavens to happen this way, right to point out where Jesus lay. Any way about it, it's wondrous, miraculous, and mysterious. Heavenly GPS. Like, here, right here, right? Drop a pin. You have arrived at your destination. Verse 10, when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. You know what that means? They were deliriously happy. That's what it means. They were crying and they were jumping up and down and they were dancing. This was it. This was the whole point of coming here. Woohoo! They were overjoyed. The point of the star was that the star was the star that the star was pointing at. Let me say that again and get it right this time. The point of this star was the star that the star was pointing at. And here he is. Here he is. Here he is. Verse 11. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary. And they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. Number two, his star was a star of worship. These men bow down, like the full thing. Knees, head to the ground, hands out like this, in front of the child. They bow down in worship. Now, we don't know if this was worship as in they knew that he was the Son of God and God the Son. Probably they didn't. They just knew that he was special. That he was a star. And they responded accordingly. Now, many people have noted that it says to the house. So this may have been some time after Jesus' birth. They're no longer in the stable. They've moved into a house of some kind. But he's still very young. And he's there with his mom. And he's being worshiped. What she must have thought. How she must have felt. And not just with faces to the ground, but expensive gifts. Gold, incense, and myrrh. This is probably where some people got the idea that there were three magi, because there are three gifts. But we don't know how many magi brought these three gifts. Doesn't say. Could have been two. Could have been 200. We don't know. Another thing we don't know. Here's another thing we don't know. Where the star went. After verse 10, it's just gone. It doesn't get mentioned again in Matthew. It doesn't get mentioned in Mark or Luke or John. And this star doesn't get mentioned again in the rest of the whole Bible. Doesn't matter. It's done its job. The star was not the point. The point of the star was the star was pointing at. And that's Jesus. And Jesus is worthy of worship. He's worthy of the gold. All the gold. He's worthy of all the gold. And he's worthy of the incense, not just a treasure, but used at the altar of sacrifice. He's worthy of the myrrh. I think we just read about myrrh and aloes in the Gospel of John, 75 pounds of it. Do you remember? After he grew up, they anointed his body with it. 30 years later, we said that myrrh was worthy of a king. Jesus is worthy. In Psalm 72, King Solomon predicts how the Messiah will be recognized. He says, the kings of Tarshish and of distant shores will bring tribute to him. The kings of Sheba and Seba will present him gifts. All kings will bow down to him. And all nations will serve him. Because he's not just going to be the king of the Jews, but the king of the Gentiles as well. The king of the whole wide world. This star revealed more than just the geolocation of Jesus. It also revealed what was going on in people's hearts. It revealed that these magi could value Jesus' worth. They could get a glimpse of how worthy he is. That's what worship is. It's seeing how worthy Jesus is and responding accordingly. It also revealed what was in Herod's heart, which was great hate of Jesus and love for himself. Look at verse 12. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. They're led into the secret that we all know. Herod cannot be trusted. He's out to kill Jesus. The rest of the chapter tells the story how an angel told Joseph to take his family and escape to Egypt. They will be refugees there until Herod dies. Herod figures out that the Magi aren't coming back, and so he decides it's time to act. He sends a kill team into Bethlehem. He puts his star math to work. He has them kill all the boys in that area that are 2 years older and under. How many boys in here are 2 years old and younger? It's ugly. It's evil. It's also the fulfillment of prophecy. Remember the book of Jeremiah from 2022 and 2023? It's in there. Rachel weeping for her children. Herod is so much like Pharaoh, killing innocent little Jewish boys. A star had risen in the heavens and led to Jesus, and Herod's response was not worship of Jesus, but worship of Herod's self at any cost. Instead of bowing down and giving up his crown, Herod sent assassins to cut the star down. He failed. But one day, one of his sons was in charge, Herod Antipas. And he conspired with Pontius Pilate. They'd been enemies until this day, but then they became friends, to send Jesus to his execution on the cross. His son got done what he failed to do. And Jesus would then fulfill his name given in Matthew chapter 1. Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. And then he came back to life to give us the light of life, because he is the light of the world, worthy of all worship, and revealing whether or not we worship him. You know, the people I wonder about the most in this story are not Herod or the Magi, as interesting as those figures are. I keep wondering about all the other people in Jerusalem who heard about all of this and didn't go see it for themselves. They didn't care. They were apathetic. Verse 3 says the whole city of Jerusalem was disturbed with Herod. They were all stirred up. Now, maybe they didn't hear the whole story. Maybe they were upset because Herod was upset. And when Herod gets upset, bad things happen. But the Magi had ridden into town. I don't know if they had donkeys or camels, like traditionally we think of them. But they'd ridden into town and they'd asked around, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." And everybody else just yawns. What about you and me? Where are our hearts today? Are we worshiping the one who had his own star? Well, you might say, "Well, I'm not going around murdering kids." Good. But are you bowing before the Lord? Are you giving yourself over to wonder at and worship of the Lord Jesus? Because there's no being on the fence with this one. He doesn't allow it. You're either Magi or Herod. You're either with the Magi or you're with Herod. You're either for him or you're against him. Are you bowing down? Are you giving to him an offering? Do you value him above all earthly treasures? Do you follow him and do what he says? Do you believe that he is everything that he claimed to be? I do. I believe that Jesus is the beautiful, bright star of Bethlehem. And he shines on. And he will shine on forever. Amen.